Welcome to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. Each weekday morning here on the Genesis Communication Network, we strive to expose the destructive and deadly myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism and the media, and with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission is to help you understand what is actually occurring while predicting how these events will shape our world over the next 20 years. Then during our second hour, we will engage God on His terms by way of His covenant and through His Torah, so that with His guidance, you'll be able to replace religion with reason and engage in a relationship. Our phone number for those who would like to participate in our discussion, question, criticize, or affirm anything that is said over the next couple of hours, 877-300-7645. There are a lot of good and a lot of very bad commercials that run on this program. I have no say in the commercials. I make no compensation from any of the commercials. My least favorite are usually associated with SRN News. SRN is the Salem Radio Network. My hope is that they are replaced as the news service for Genesis Communication Network. But their sponsor today was JanetReedsTableTalk.com. Normally, I would just ignore this. I typically do. Most of my listeners know that I have nothing to do with the ads. The woman promoting Janet Reed's Table Talk magazine or book, whatever it may be, talked about 2 Timothy. Now, Timothy, 2 Timothy was written, as were all of the Pauline letters, by Paul. God specifically calls Paul out by name to say that he is arrogant, that he is presumptuous, that he is deceitful, and that those who embrace the broad way that he is laying out will find nothing but the plague of death. He is the false apostle of the open revelation letter to the Ephesians. He is the wolf in sheep's clothing in the Sermon on the Mount. To associate a letter that Paul wrote, particularly to his boyfriend Timothy, as the word of God, is revolting. It is absolutely despicable. You know, it's interesting, in 2 Timothy, Paul is just, woe is me. He has now been found out. Everyone who knew him rejected him. Everyone. He was there alone in Rome, wallowing in self-pity because those who knew him best rejected him. They knew he was a fraud. It was obvious he was a fraud. To equate Paul's letters, which are absolutely gibberish in terms of the quality of the writing, but far worse than that, are universally opposed to God's own testimony, with the word of God, is nothing other than irrational and religious. Now, I would like to turn our attention to a radio program that, from my vantage point, would probably get one thing right with every 20 things they say, but nonetheless, they did get this mostly right. 2 days ago, NPR, on one of their programs, speaking of the Chernarev brothers, said that their mother was the first to become, in quotes, radicalized. The sons soon followed. Now, recognizing that radicalized has become the term de jour, that everyone is using this exact same term, radicalized, we will examine that in a moment. But, Scott, you have a clip from a conversation with the mother of the Boston Marathon bombers that I'd like you to play, because it is disgusting, but it is also extraordinarily telling. It's the same confession that we heard on 9/11 with the suicide bombers that flew planes into our buildings while screaming Allahu Akbar.
My sons were innocent, and I love them, and I want the whole world to hear about it. I love them, and I will love them, and I want to go I want to join them. If they're going to kill me today, I will be happy. Happy. Okay?
Tell me how you feel about the accusations against him.
Terrible.
Did he do what he's told?
They were being killed just because they were Muslim. Nothing else.
That's not for me.
You think they will get a fair trial?
What?
You think they will get a fair trial?
Only Allah knows it. I don't know.
Well, let's examine this under the, or at least from the perspective of what Muhammad promoted in Islam. The Boston Marathon bombers are innocent. Now you say, whoa, wait a minute. I just told you, from the perspective of what Muhammad presented in Islam, from his Quran and from his hadith, from his words and from his example, they are not only innocent, they are, in fact, going exactly where this woman said. They're going to join Allah in the Islamic paradise. They are innocent. They did exactly what they are ordered to do by Allah in the Quran and by Muhammad in his life. And so from a Quranic, Islamic, Muhammadan definition of good and bad, they did the ultimate good deed. The Quran verse that they posted on their Facebook site, Allah loves those who do good. And we then read in the Quran on our program last Friday how Allah defines good, which is killing non-Muslims. So, by the Quranic definition, they would be innocent. Now, you might wonder, so what would you have to do to be guilty by an Islamic definition? You'd have to be peaceful. If you are pro-peace, if you're promoting peace, if you're promoting tolerance and living in harmony with others, that would be guilty in Islam. So that's the first comment. Second, she wants to join them. And she said to join them, you would have to kill her, which is to say that by carrying out a terrorist attack, by killing in Allah's cause, that it is her religious belief that the boys are, at least the first, the eldest son, suspect number one, is now with Allah celebrating the good deed that he did in Allah's cause. And she wants to be killed. Now, she can't take her own life and get there. She knows that according to what the hadith reveal. She has to be killed by a non-Muslim for her to join her son in Allah's brothel.
I was going to make a comment on that. That's shouldn't she be picked up now as somebody that we should worry about in the future?
Well, of course, but we won't do that kind of thing. She happens to be, I think, in Russia, in Dagestan, in Russia. But the elder Tamerlane, the brother named after the most reprehensible human probably ever to live in terms of just numbers of people that he could murder, that he ended up murdering, Tamerlane, the Muslim from Mongolia. But, you know, the FBI interviewed him. He had all that same kind of sentiment, and we just let him go. So they are innocent by the Islamic definition, and that's the thing that bothers me the most about the media and other coverage of this incident, is that we don't know the Islamic definition. And if you don't know the Islamic definitions, you don't know why these people are doing this. Therefore, when you're being interviewed, you're on the media, you're in politics, you're in the judicial system, you are completely befuddled and confused because you don't know why. Well, if you want to know why, you have to understand the Islamic mindset, which is presented in the Quran and Hadith. You have to read those things. They are innocent by that standard. And if the mother is killed by that standard, she will join them. Now, the fact that Allah lied about everything means that she won't actually join them in paradise. But from her mindset, that's exactly what would happen. She then screamed, Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar is the Islamic prayer of fear. It does not mean God is great. This is, again, part of the purposeful deception perpetrated by the media and by politicians throughout the world. Allahu Akbar means Allah is greater. It is a comparative term. It was first used during Muhammad's raid of the Jews at Kabar. Now, don't think for a moment this was a military engagement and that the Jews at Kabar were attacking Muhammad and he had to defend the Muslims. That was not the case. Muhammad had exiled the Jews that were now reestablished in a farming community because he wanted to steal their homes, steal their possessions. And so he did. They were exiled into the desert to die. They actually survived. They formed a farming community called Kabar. Muhammad, after having reneged on his promise to terrorize Mecca and forming the 10-year pact that he wouldn't terrorize Mecca anymore, which, of course, he reneged the following year and terrorized Mecca and conquered it, telling you that this man's testimony cannot be trusted. But as they approached Kabar, this farming community, at dawn, Muhammad had his Muslims scream, Allahu Akbar. He called it the prayer of fear because he was a terrorist. He wanted to incite fear in his victims. Now, it was a pure terrorist raid. It was a group of armed militants going after ordinary civilians. Terrorist raid. It was also a raid of a pirate and profiteer, a slave trader, of a mass murderer. But the phrase Allahu Akbar, first used at the Kabar raid, was designed specifically to explain what the term means. Allah is greater requires you to say, greater than who? Now, if you change Allah to God and you say, God is greater, how can God be greater than anything? Well, the entire purpose of Allahu Akbar is that the Islamic God, Allah, was greater than the Jewish God, Yahweh. And that is exactly what Satan wants everyone on this planet to believe. We'll be back in a moment. Dr. Shatteringness, I am Yada. If you would like to participate in the discussion, if you wish to challenge what I am saying, you are welcome to do so. Our number is 877-300-7645. Once this woman screamed Allahu Akbar, once the terrorists of 9/11 fame screamed Allahu Akbar into the cockpit voice recorders as they flew planes into our buildings. Once every Muslim that commits a terrorist act anywhere in the world today screams Allahu Akbar before they perpetrate their dastardly deed. My guess is, too, that that the confession letter written by the Joker of the younger Tamerlane, Tamerlane's younger brother, when he wrote his confession, that somewhere in that confession was an Allahu Akbar, and that in the phone recording where they were chatting with each other before they blew up their bombs in Boston, that there was an Allahu Akbar in that conversation and then by both of them before they pulled the trigger. If you understand the context of and the meaning of Allahu Akbar, you understand exactly what's happening. You know who the terrorists are. You know why they kill. You even know what you need to do to stop them. Everything you need to know is in that one phrase, and the commonality of that phrase used by Islamic terrorists throughout the world today. And the fact that it goes right back to Muhammad's day, first used at a terrorist raid that Muhammad was leading. There's no other way to look at this raid. Muhammad was armed to the teeth with many hundreds of Muslim militants, of jihadists, of mujahideen, armed coming against a farming community that didn't have any weapons. Farming community that had no army, it had no means of defense. It was simply a farming community in Arabia. They had no need prior to Islam of having a defense. They were growing food. Muhammad was growing barbarians. They approached at the morning. There are scores of hadith that explain what happened at this on this particular day. Scores upon scores of them. But Muhammad had his men yell. This is something they were looking at the community and said, okay, do we just attack? No. Muhammad had a point that he wanted to make. It wasn't about the attack. It was about who they were attacking. You see, Yahweh's chosen people are Yehudim. This was a village of Yehudim, Jews. The God of Abraham, of Yishak, of Jacob, the God of the children of Israel, the only real God, is Yahweh. And so Satan does not want to be the adversary. He wants to be God. He wants people to think that he is God. And so the way that he goes about that, as God tells us in the book Yeshayah, Isaiah, is that he wants to be seen as greater than and as above the Most High. That's what Allahu Akbar means. The moment Allahu Akbar came out of Muhammad's mouth, as his Muslims were facing Yehudim, the gig was over. Anyone who understands who Satan is, what Satan wants, how Yahweh has explained the adversary's nature, understands it all. Everything falls into place. With Allahu Akbar shouted before the Kabar Jewish community. It is Satan as Allah saying, I am greater than Yahweh. I am greater than God. And so that's what was shouted here by this woman. It is what's shouted before every Islamic terrorist attack. It is the confession. Once you hear it, you no longer have to wonder. You don't have to do an investigation as to what their motivations were. You know them. You understand what Islam is about, which is to elevate Satan to the position of God. You know why the Islamic scriptural sources are so revolting, so violent, so deadly. You know why 99.9% of terrorist acts today are perpetrated by fundamentalist Muslims. You know who they are. You know why they kill. Now, the only question that might be in some minds is, how do you stop them? You know, what's interesting is talking with Scott during the break, we were talking about this woman wanted to join her sons. And I talked about, according to the Islamic scriptural sources, how she could go about doing that. And the only guaranteed way to enter the Islamic paradise is to be killed, killing non-Muslims. That's the only way to enter the Islamic paradise, is to die in the process of killing in Allah's cause and killing non-Muslims. Now, there is an out for killing peaceful Muslims, too, and if you die killing a hypocritical Muslim, there may also be an out. But we'll talk about suicide in a moment.
We all...
Welcome back to Shattering Mist. We're talking about the mother of Jokar and Tamerlane Sanarev, the Boston bombers, and her comments that her boys were innocent, and they are by Islamic standards, that she wanted to join them, which would require a non-Muslim killing her, and then shouting Allahu Akbar, which... As I have said, if you understand Allahu Akbar, then you have a comprehensive understanding of what Islam represents, who Allah is, why Muslims kill, why they are so deceitful, why they are so deadly, why they are so confused, why they are so uncivil, why they hate Jews. All of it makes sense the moment you understand Allahu Akbar. And even if you don't want to look at the history of the Kabar raid and you don't want to understand any of that, if you just look for a definition and you realize that Allah is the name, according to the Quran, of the Islamic God, it's not the word for God, that would be Ilah, not Allah. And you realize that Akbar is greater, then you'd have to say it makes absolutely no sense to say Allah is greater unless Allah wants to be compared to someone. And what is Satan's overall overarching desire? To be considered greater than God, to be become God, to be seen as God. Allahu Akbar is that confession. Now, I told you that that this woman wanted to go to paradise, and so you might think, oh, she'll become a suicide bomber. You know, it's an interesting insight here, but there's only one hadith declaration regarding suicide. It is not favorable to the suicide bombers. So if you were a suicide bomber in waiting, you ought to listen to this. Muhammad was engaged in one of his terrorist raids, and one of his most ruthless and therefore most effective barbarians, Mujahideen jihadists, was savagely injured in that raid. Shot full of arrows and sword slashes and the like. And after the battle, it was that this is a man who has plundered for Allah, been on many of Allah's and Muhammad's terrorist raids, had been a savage on behalf of Allah and Muhammad. And in this particular raid, while he may have killed many people, he himself inflicted mortal wounds. And he was, there was no chance that he was going to survive. And he knew that it was just a matter of hours or days, and he would be, it would be over for him. And so he decided that he would take his own life to end the agony. And so Muhammad was told that his most fierce warrior, and warrior's a bad term because these weren't warriors, these were terrorists. They never once operated as an army to attack another military. So they were simply terrorists. But his most ruthless terrorist was now dead, having finally taken his own life as a result of his mortal injuries and his agony. And so the Muslims were looking for clarification. You know, is that an acceptable thing to do? And Muhammad said, no, he's in hell. No, you can't do that. You see, Muhammad had no interest in someone taking their own life. He wanted people who would continue to kill on his behalf, continue to rob on his behalf, continue to enslave on his behalf, continue to enrich him, empower him. And so the one man who was engaged in countless jihadi acts as a savage Muslim under the direction of Muhammad, when he received mortal wounds and was dying, took his own life, and Muhammad said he's in hell. So all you would-be suicide bombers out there, you probably ought not to do that. Because according to the lone spokesperson for your wannabe God, you'll end up in hell. The last comment the woman made, the mother made, was they were being killed because they are Muslims. You know, one of the things that is always true about Islam is that its views of the world are always backwards. Whatever the truth is, their impressions are always the inverse of that. You know, they blame Jews for their deplorable conditions in this world, and yet they're the ones who inflict deplorable conditions on Jews. And matter of fact, when Muslims were actually integrated in a Jewish community in Israel, where Muslims from 1948 to about 1960 lived in harmony with the Jews in Israel, they were the richest, most free, healthiest, best educated, and freest Muslims in the world. So it's always the opposite of what Muslims believe. They are being killed because they are Muslims. The antithesis of that is they kill because they are Muslims. The antithesis is true. They killed because they are Muslims. One was killed because he was fleeing capture. By the way, fleeing capture would not qualify him as a jihadist, and therefore, according to the Islamic scriptures, he is not in Allah's brothel. and the younger one will be killed or in prison forever, but he too won't meet the criterion. So he too will not assume the multiple virgins for conquest. We are told that Jokhar wrote a confession in the boat as he was awaiting capture. We're also told that that he was essentially bleeding to death, and that when the homeowner saw the blood trail and lifted up the cover to look at him in the boat, that he was barely alive, which tells you, boy, that was sure the smart thing to do, to fire many hundreds of rounds of ammunition at him. But he wrote a confession where it said that that claims that Tamerlane is already with Allah, and that they had perpetrated their bombing because they sought to promote Islam. There you go. That's the answer. It's a confession. Play it at the trial. Be done with it. Stop all this nonsense on radio and television of people saying, boy, I sure wonder what happened. One of the spokespeople that I thought was particularly interesting, New York City police chief, said that that the last 16 plots by terrorists in New York, all of which were stopped, were all by American jihadists. None of them were associated with Al-Qaeda or any other foreign Islamic terrorist organization, he said. They were all identical to what happened in Boston. Just American mujahideen. And that he said that, you know, they had been indoctrinated in the mosque and in the online here in America before trying to bomb various aspects of New York City. So the city did a comprehensive study on all of the attempted terrorist acts since 9/11. And it claimed the conclusion of that was that homegrown Islamic jihadists, like those that perpetrated the Boston bombings and killings, were the most significant threat to the city of New York. We don't have to look outside this. As I kept on saying during the early days of this, that not only was it obvious that Muslims perpetrated the plot, but to call Islamic terrorism international terrorism is absurd. There is a cry in a number of conservative circles and conspiracy-related circles over the Saudi national who was injured during the blast, who acted so oddly that those citizens, the civilians at the scene, tackled him and turned him over to the authorities because he was enjoying the carnage that he was witnessing. That there is something afoul with him being deported now back to Saudi Arabia. There was an original denial by the Obama administration that he was being deported because he had known terrorist ties, that he was, in fact, a mujahideen jihadist who wished and desired to terrorize Americans. And then there is an admittance that, yes, that is why he is being deported. There was a meeting, of course, with the Saudi ambassador, with the President of the United States, that was not on his calendar, that took place the day after the bombings, when it was known that the Saudi national was in the hospital under armed guard. His apartment was thoroughly searched, but after the meeting, he went from suspect to person of interest to a person who's going to be deported. The reason this is so concerning, of course, to Americans is that immediately after 9/11, when it was obvious that that 80% of the suicide bombers, of the Islamic suicide bombers of 9/11, were Saudi citizens and therefore had received the indoctrination that caused them to be jihadists in Saudi Arabia, that that not only were Sauds escorted out of the country, and direct family relatives of Osama bin Laden, he had sons that were deeply involved in the Washington area mosques. There was the only plane allowed to fly. It was a Saudi 747. Every other airplane was grounded. And so with the United States curtailing anything that would be considered appropriate, just, that would give us some actual leverage to defend ourselves against the 9/11 attacks, I mean, not to, to at least seek some justice in the 9/11 attacks, George Bush let them go. Then he let them go because George Bush was far more concerned long-term about his relationship with Saudi Arabia than he was with the United States. They were paying him, after all. Abrusco Oil, George Bush's failed oil venture, was funded indirectly by the Osama bin Laden family and by Saudi Arabians. So you were, when you hear that kind of thing happening again, it causes you to say your government is working against you rather than for you. Here's what I would tell Americans that are concerned about that. Yes, you're right. It stinks to high heaven. Is it grotesquely inappropriate? Absolutely. But here's the reality. America is holding on to its reserve currency status by its fingernails. The largest trading partners in the world, Russia, China, India, Germany, have already agreed to stop using dollars as the world's reserve currencies and to buy and sell directly using their own currencies. The moment America loses its reserve currency status, it's over for America. We cease to be sovereign. We become a worse condition than what we saw at Cyprus. Our biggest ally in reserve currency status is currently Saudi Arabia. To the final segment of the news hour of Shattering Myths. We'll turn to the Torah in a moment. The message that I want to convey regarding the Saudi citizen that is either has been or is about to be deported and all the furor that exists over it is that we put ourselves in this situation. Those Americans who have consistently voted to continue Social Security and Medicare as those Ponzi schemes currently exist. Those Americans who have voted to redistribute wealth and to lower taxes on most Americans to the point of non-existence and to raise taxes on the most productive wage earners. Those Americans who have consistently voted for the candidate that is most likely to have a strong military. You caused this. You're responsible. You know, don't be complaining if you are a right-wing conservative and you love your military because you caused it. Our debt, our constant national consumption, where we consume vastly more than we produce, where we are unwilling to measure the spending to revenue, and therefore our deficits have put us in a position where we have inflated our money to the point now where the world is looking to replace us as the dollar as the reserve currency. And Saudi Arabia is the last stalwart in that situation. If they were to say, no more, we're going to join Iraq, Iran, Kuwait, and others in that regard, then it's over. It's just over. The United States will be an anarchy the following day. So they control us. We are controlled by them completely and totally. Is the sad, sad situation of that. So if you are complaining, you ought to know that that is the case. The investigation in Boston by our crack super team that's supposed to be investigating terrorists said that Joe Carr said that his older brother was the driving force behind the attack, not Islam, but that there was no international terrorist groups that they were associated with of any kind. That means that they are self-grown terrorists. That means that their terrorism is a direct result of the Quran and Hadith of following Muhammad. It was interesting to see Lindsey Graham, the Republican of South Carolina, calling them to be handed over to the U.S. intelligence and military as enemy combatants. Now, by the way, if they're enemy combatants, then they have every right to kill Americans. If we're at war with them and we can indiscriminately kill them, then they can indiscriminately kill us. They can't be held guilty of killing an American if, in fact, we're at war with them. Think about that. The moment you say that they're an enemy combatant, that we can fly drones over Pakistan and over other places in the Middle East and kill them because they're enemy combatants, then just as in the case of war, if they, you can't try and convict someone who is killing your guys if you think it's okay to kill their guys. And then Graham said, oh, what I want this done this way because there's ample evidence on the criminal side. What I want to know what this individual knows about future attacks or about terrorist organizations that might be in our midst. Read the damn Quran, Senator. They've already said there is no association with any terrorist organization. Now, the government will do everything they can to try to pin it on some name of some obscure group out there because that's what they want. Because they want to blame it on anything but Islam. Now, it's also interesting that all we hear is that they became increasingly radical in the past, that they are radicals, and that the whole problem is with radicals. In fact, you almost don't even hear radical Islam with radical being an adjective. And the primary use of radical is as an adjective. And so you don't even hear it so much anymore as radical Islam, but just radicals as a noun. So I decided I'd look up radical. First definition of one online dictionary, basic, relating to or affecting, moving or upsetting the basic nature of the most important features of something. Well, that would be the antithesis of this in terms of affecting, moving, or upsetting the basic nature of Islam. They aren't radicals. They aren't trying to upset the basic nature of Islam, they're embracing it. We'll return to this thought tomorrow, but next, the Torah.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my...